Let's just go.
All right.
Hello,
then.
All right, sorry.
No, you're good. We got this. We got this. Hello, and welcome to the episode 16. That's so bad. Hello. God, I am tired. You're right.
Hello, and welcome to the episode 16 Provisional Nerf News Network podcast. I am Grim, and that's KT. He is very tired.
Oh, my God. All right, we're going with that. Nice job, Grim. Yes, this is episode 16. This is the partner episode to... Oh, wait, I'm supposed to say... Everybody say what's up.
What up?
What up?
What's up?
This is the partner episode to episode 16 of the Provisional Nerf News Network show, which came out the day before. It's probably helpful to see that episode before listening to the podcast, but it's probably also fine. But we will assume that you've seen the show and probably won't explain things that we explained in the show. So that's something to be aware of. Excited to have the whole team here today. We have Vile Mods, we have JoltKing627, and we have Grim's Nerf Works. Digging right into topics. Of course, there is such huge news this episode round. Nerf finally did it after all of this time. People have been begging and begging and begging and wondering when this would happen. Nerf finally dropped a Christmas-themed jolt. After all these years, we thought it would never happen, but we finally have a holly jolly jolt.
Merry Chrysler.
That is just the biggest news this episode that we could possibly have imagined. Really, really excited. I don't know about how y'all feel about that.
Oh, I'm absolutely ecstatic. I'm absolutely like trembling with just absolute joy right now.
Okay, no, for real, of course. The big news this week is the Nerf Pro Strife X, and of course we will be talking about it in the podcast. We're going to put that later in the show. It'll happen after What's That Blaster. If you're just here to listen to us talk about the Pro Strife X, I totally understand. You can find the timestamp down below, but I think you'll have a better time if you stick around and listen to the whole show. So we're going to talk for a bit about stories that were submitted to us that didn't wind up making the show. And we're going to talk about the X-Shot blind bags and whether blind bags have a place in our hobby and in the market for our hobby. We're going to play What's That Blaster? Vile is picking the blaster this episode. And then, as promised, we will talk about the Nerf Pro Strife X and its place in what we do. So right off the bat, skipped stories. The first story that was dropped to us was, I want to talk about this one really briefly, mostly as an example of like why some things don't necessarily make a lot of sense for us to cover. There's a new Nerf slingshot bowling product, and it's like, I was looking at it a second ago. It's Nerf has a lot of products that are not actually made by Nerf. They're like licensed toys that just get the Nerf name on them. If you've ever played with one of those, like a lot of the targets, right?
Yeah.
And there's the skeet shooters are not made by Nerf.
I don't think that's the same group anymore. A lot of the higher quality foam stuff and like Nerf swords used to be done by a different side company. I think the current one that does the stuff like some of the older Nerf gear was also done by a separate company. I think the current group they use, which is the one with the more disappointing and like really flimsy and flaccid foam quality, is they call it the Perpetual Play Group or something.
Yeah.
I remember hearing people refer to that one a number of times back a couple years ago when that stuff was coming out.
I've heard that as well.
I am looking at this product. I had forgotten this had even been submitted. It's that uninteresting, but It looks like the old vintage blaster. It looks like it's got the little knock that's supposed to whack the ball out, and it probably performs like absolute dog crap. It's kind of cute, though.
The one thing I think is interesting about this is you can't tell from this picture what this is, right? But, like, if you squint, it kind of looks like it could be ballistic balls.
Maybe. They look too squishy to be.
I think that they're maybe more like stress balls, or they could even be like ping pong balls. It's really hard to tell with this picture, but like it is just like a yellow ball with the Nerf logo on it, and then some weird little The things that you're supposed to knock over when you're bowling, the pins, look like those things you throw in the pool to teach kids to, like, dive to the bottom and retrieve them.
They kind of do, now that you mention it. They also look like lightsaber hilts or something.
Yeah, and the way that this slingshot works, where, like, there's, like, it looks like a Star Wars energy source of some, or, like, something you'd see in a Star Wars show, where, like, there's these, like,
oh, yeah, in between,
holding,
like,
the ball in place.
In between, like, a pod racer or something, like, those arcs of energy.
Like you were saying, like, the knock is literally just, like, a weird, like, black, hard plastic ball.
Now,
you could,
this
I feel like you could get hurt
bowling.
With this. apparently. Anyway, this kind of product, while it carries the Nerf brand, there's not a lot to talk about. I mean, I guess we just talked about it for, like, 2 minutes. But it's not really relevant to the hobby. Every now and then you see something like this that's sort of tangential to the hobby, like, in some ways you could say, like, the Busby Spin Shot and the other one is, like, not really our thing, but, like, it has a clear place in our hobby where people are always looking for alternative ammo. This is kind of just, like, I don't know who the audience is for this.
The only thing I could even see is, I mean, the ammo, if you can't get it separately, you know, it's not like we can use it potentially for something. And even the little upright, you know, bowling pins, isn't that what is it Xavier calls them? MacGuffins? Like, maybe that's what they would use them for, but we already have so many, it's kind of just, you know,
well, like,
just whatever.
A MacGuffin, you use a stick.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Whatever.
That's what,
like,
I mean.
You don't need this. It's very weird. So that's that. That's why we didn't talk about this. Also, we didn't talk about this because it would have gone in the name brand section of the new show, and that section of the new show is extremely long, this episode.
Yeah, wonder
no
why
space.
It's so long.
I wonder why. I don't know. Some story must have just, you know, taken a while. Next thing up that got skipped was the HQ G4 prototype, and I'll probably hand this one off to Vile, because I know Vile did some looking into this one.
Yeah, I looked into it. It's, The manufacturer, it's really cool. Like, it's this machined lever action. Like, it looks like super high quality, and, you know, and it actually loads darts. It's not like the Chinese ones where you put a dart in a shell and then you load the shell. It actually, like, loaded the dart, and it looked really neat. But the problem with it when I was digging is that it's a Chinese manufacturer who only sells in China, and there is no distribution outside of China. And I'd have to go back and look at our analytics, but last I checked, I don't think there's too many people who are watching or looking into our show that are in China specifically.
I'm kind of curious now.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. And I was like, you know, if it's something that, you know, 95% of the people who are in this hobby that are not in mainland China are out there, they're not going to get a hold of it. And it kind of just feels like a tease of, here's this cool item you'll never get. And I just don't see a point in
dangle
that.
Dangle candy in front of a child.
Yeah, kind of. And so again, while it's cool and it looks neat.
The closest thing that's anywhere near there is 1% of our viewer base is in the Philippines. 0.3% of our viewer base is from Singapore and Malaysia. Vietnam is 0.2% is from Vietnam, and then 0.1%
is from
Taiwan.
We're gonna lose them. We gotta cover it.
And it doesn't go any further than that. Those are all the ones anywhere close to China.
And people who are in those areas are more likely to be able to get a hold of it. But it is still, again, it's a very, very difficult item that doesn't really find its way outside of mainland China. So that just seemed, again, not really a thing for us to really talk about, because it just doesn't seem relevant.
So that one got left off, kind of like Diana last episode, some other things before that. Another one that is interesting, because there is a bigger story here that is the kind of thing that, like, I've considered trying to do, like, specials on topics like this that would sort of break up a normal episode, because they'd be sort of deeper dives. But there are things that I really would like to talk about. Someone mentioned that the X-Shot long shot was available in Bahrain, which I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
It's just Bahrain, but, you know.
You can anglicize it. But anyway, the bigger story here is that X-Shot is really dominating a lot of the international market right now. And I think that there's there's a lot to talk about there.
I would argue they're doing more than even Hasbro, because Hasbro, as we know,
absolutely
won't send rival to certain countries. They won't send certain blasters. They'll reduce power on some product. While X-Shot is just like, we're just going to put this everywhere. We could just do that. We get sued and whatever. We're big and rich or something. I don't know.
Totally. The fact that Nerf won't even send a lot of stuff to like England. You know,
like the UK doesn't get like half the offerings. I have some friends who live in the UK and they don't get like half the blasters.
Yep. The fact that X-Shot has managed to sort of has taken the time to penetrate those markets. And part of it is that it's a split China UK company, right? So they're not actually primarily US based. Obviously, they have a US arm. They have an office here, but I think that they've really like recognized that they have an opportunity to sort of take command in those areas. And so that's something I'd like to look into deeper, but it would be kind of its own story. So I'm not sure how, when or if that will get reported on in the way that I would like, but at some point. We also had some of the X-Shot gel stuff is becoming available. I actually saw the clutch. Someone reported the clutch specifically. I actually saw it. So this was actually interesting. I went to my local Walmart. I've mentioned this a lot, but I live in an area where we have a pretty small Walmart and just one, and which is fine. That's fine. But they recently completely reorganized their Nerf aisle, and they basically flipped it. It used to be if you walked in like from the front door side of the store, you would first get to Elite Junior and then a bunch of the like Adventure Force stuff that was like lower cost, and then all the Minecraft and Roblox stuff, and then Fortnite, and then Elite-ish, like more like older kid stuff, and then the pro stuff. And they flipped it completely. Now you come to gel and then pro and rival stuff, and it goes back in the opposite direction down to the younger kid stuff deeper into the shelf.
That's wild.
And I'm wondering if anybody else has noticed that change in their aisles, or if that's a thing that's local to me.
I don't leave the house as often anymore, so I don't actively check the stores, because a lot of the stuff I get is like hobby-based or I already have. However, I have noted, at the very least, since I spend a lot of time online, one thing I've noted is in communities that aren't even directly in any way related to blasting hobbies, whether it be gel, airsoft, paintball, or Nerf, I've been seeing more and more people talking about gel just randomly, or showing it off like it's their new cool thing that they think it's super sweet and it like makes them look cool like airsoft. So it's been an interesting cultural thing to notice that people in general, other areas, seem to think it's something that's being adopted that is interesting to them, or something that they're interested in. Especially a lot of them were older audiences, actually, that are like more in their like early 20s ish. So yeah.
My instinct is that that's happening just because the marketing is working. But I don't know. I was just helping some friends move, big part of why I'm really tired. First of all, sign of a really good friend is that you'll spend 6 hours unloading someone's truck. But also a sign of a good friend is that when your friend does spend 6 hours unloading your truck, they'll pay you in Nerf blasters when you find the Nerf bin, and they're like, man, just take whatever you want. Picked up like, nice. he gave me like an Infinus and a bunch of rival stuff, a bunch of stuff for modding. One of those Stormtrooper blasters, those like weird long ones. But he also offered me, he had like 3 mythics for some reason. Because at some point he saw them and was like, oh, that looks fun. And then tried them and was like, oh, this is garbage. Like, he was like, I don't even like gel that much, but even for gel blasters, these are garbage.
Yeah.
He's a pretty casual consumer, right? Like, any connection he has to like more advanced stuff is through me. But you know, I mean, that's more of a question of Nerf's attempts to get into pro lines, which I don't know if that's a topic we want to get into today for any reason.
No, definitely not.
Instead, let's talk about Kinder Eggs and miniature Disney toys.
Oh boy, I love chocolate.
Plastic balls and
Lego minifigures.
Well, so, you know, the big, I think the most interesting part about the X-Shot Menace blind bags is, you know, that it's Zuru sort of like we said in the show, crossing the streams and taking their sort of core business of just like random weird toys and sort of mixing it with their blaster business. Theoretically, you know, taking their experience from doing the blind bag thing and applying it to this. And I guess I'm wondering, first of all, like, if you're going into, would you, if you walked into the store, would you be enticed to buy something like this as a hobbyist?
No, absolutely not. And I have very strong opinions on this completely, if I may.
Yeah.
I believe, frankly, that this is disgusting. This is yet another attempt by Zuru to commodify the market, like what happened to Super Soakers. And it is just basically an attempt to turn it into something where a parent will just go buy more and more and more and more and more without any reason to. It's trying to turn it into a collecting hobby rather than a sport. I've always disliked the blind bag toy in general. I didn't like it with Lego minifigures. I didn't like it with anything else. It's basically a money-grabbing scheme, and it's bad for the consumer. At least, and even now, it just doesn't feel like the sort of thing that makes any sense. Like, why would you grab a mystery bag when there's one, when there's one just on the shelf right next to it that you can see what you're gonna get? Mm. And like, yes, there is supposedly a way where you can feel the pack because the texture is different for this special gold one, which, if that doesn't give you vibes of the old Lego minifigures Mr. Gold, I don't know what does.
Oh boy, well, okay. I remember trying to get Mr. Gold.
Oh my
god.
So, Joel, I really vibe with what you're saying. I totally agree. I don't like the blind bag. Like, the blind bag thing is like selling like a false excitement of like, oh, you don't ever know what you're gonna get. And then most of the time, like the Lego thing, right? Like, certain ones have more or less rarity, and so you pull. I mean, obviously, we're never gonna have like statistics on pull rates for Nerf X Shot, FaZe Clan, Menaces.
Didn't even talk about the FaZe Clan thing, so it's even more niche.
Yeah, right. But supposedly, you know, you've got the four designs and then the gold design, and the four designs will supposedly be roughly equally rare, and then the gold ones will be rarer.
That wasn't what it was. Some of them were different rarities, and it just happened to be the gold was the rarest.
Oh. Weird.
Yeah.
Which, like, I also kind of hate that.
Well, okay, but hold on. So, like I'm saying, I vibe with what you're saying, but I want to dig a little bit deeper on it. How do you feel about, I mean, anyone's welcome to chime in on this, but how do you feel, because like I just went in and I saw all the different Sonic Manics or Menaces, god, the names, man, and I really liked them. I held off on buying them. Like, the temptation to buy all three of the different designs is very high, but like, how much of a difference do you think there is between that aspect of using skins to sort of, as you say, commodify them versus the blind bag ones?
I would say the difference here is one teaches collecting to kids and the other teaches gambling to kids.
Yeah,
actually, I was going to mention that, the gambling port, because and somebody in Europe or UK might be able to answer in comments, because I'm not sure. I know that in a lot of European countries, they do look at things like that as a form of gambling.
Yeah, because so, well, that's what it is.
Coming from the Pokemon TCG world, there's been a huge crackdown on live streams of people opening packs and letting people like pay into the packs before they're opened,
mm-hmm.
which has been identified as a form of gambling. Twitch banned it recently as a type of live stream you can do. And there's really like, it's a huge problem in trading card games, which like there's reasonable enough reasons to do trading card, like selling trading cards in sealed packs the way that they do, but they're like, so many nasty things come out of that.
I was gonna say, yeah, one of the things that I can attest to as a guy who grew up when the big Pokemon boom really got even bigger,
The thing that it was a thing is there wasn't child gambling laws or anything like that, to my knowledge, in place. So I was a mass consumer as a kid of Pokemon cards. And then when I got older, when I got a little bit older, there was also like these Power Ranger Mega Blocks or Creo minifigure packs. And then there was the Lego minifigure series packs that were like loot boxes. And then there was like, don't even get me started on the whole, what did they call them? Not mystery. I think it was mystery box boom that happened on YouTube and stuff like that, that people were selling mystery boxes and all sorts of like subscription-based mystery services to kids.
Oh god.
And then when I got even older, then the mass monetization of like random loot boxes happened.
Loot crate and then stuff.
So it's just like, as a, it's, to me, due to the fact that I grew up with this stuff, it seems normal to me, but I understand it's like, it's not good for the child's development. Like, had I not had smarter parents who advised me about the dangers of gambling, I don't even know what I would have turned out like had I not been taught that, you know, and they noted that and steered me in the right direction. So it's like, I can definitely see this as a big problem. The novelty of it isn't necessarily lost on me because I remember enjoying those things, but I also know that it's a very risky game to get into, and I don't necessarily like that it's entering the hobby space necessarily. As a business, of course, since they are a business, I can see where they're coming from. It's a very lucrative thing to get into. I just don't necessarily like that it's happening.
Yeah, you use the phrase money grab, Jolt, and I've made clear my opinion on that phrase. These are companies. Grabbing money is what they do. That is their job.
That's their job. They're not our friends. They're there to please shareholders and make the stocks go up.
Oh, absolutely.
Literally everything they do is a money grab. But this in particular, it's like, what it is a money grab at what cost?
Some money grabs are more blatant than others.
Yes, absolutely.
Like it is one thing to release like what Nerf did with the Sharp 92. We're like, yeah, that's a money grab. It's a shameless play on our nostalgia, or even just it's cool vintage. I'm not even old enough to remember that from being a child, and I still bought one. I love that thing. But at a point, it's just clearly just kind of gross.
The money is blinding them in that regard over the safety factor.
You can be like, I'm going to appeal to your nostalgia in a way that is going to bring you great joy. And you will pay me money for it. And that is how I'm going to grab your money. And at that point, I'm like the Needler, man. That thing's still...
Just a second. Can we talk about the fact that, like... All right, I'm going to... You, of course, this isn't going to show up in the podcast since we don't do video. But, like, I'm just going to turn on my camera right here. Look at what's on top of my PC glowing ablaze right now.
Yes.
Yeah, I have it yes, on top King. Of my computer. I have it on top of my computer in display mode, glowing all the needles and whatnot. I love that thing. It's one of my favorite Christmas presents I've ever gotten for myself.
It's one of the best things Nerf has made in a long time.
Oh, but yeah,
I just use that as an example to be like, they absolutely grabbed my money, and I was happy about it. I'm fine. That's fine. I'm so happy with it. There's a difference here where. I mean, like, it's easy for me to look at this and be like, I could not possibly care less about FaZe Clan, so I am not tempted to buy these in any way whatsoever, when I can go buy a specific Sonic print right next to it.
Exactly.
If they had instead had a blind bag series where it's like, it could be one of these 20 prints, this is the only place where you can get this one Sonic print, or some other license that I... Like, what if it was blind bags and it was like, there's three exclusive Sonic prints... Three exclusive Poppy's Playtime prints and three exclusive FaZe Clan prints. You don't know which one you're going to get. And now, if you're only interested in one of those franchises, you just gotta take the gamble.
No, you gotta take the gamble.
The problem with that is too, is since they have the licenses for them on those, and all three of those nowadays have a very big child popular market. Especially FaZe Clan. Oh no! That could go really bad. They also have the ninja license too.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that's what that. Makes me uncomfortable. I still have like one of the little keychain things or whatever.
That made me like the thought of them potentially doing that kind of just made me shudder for a second because like that would sell like hotcakes and that would be really bad for like children.
And I mean, they already do this. And that's what the tiny toys in the balls is, right? This is
yeah, for sure.
Now it's kind of coming on our home turf.
Yeah, so. Normally it's just like they're like belong. The little $5 toy in the corner of the store that's from like Faceless Company Z or whatever, yeah. You know?
They sell them at like Claire's, apparently.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, overall, I would say I'm disgusted by this. It has no place in our hobby. And X-Shot, could you please kindly not?
Yeah.
Please, no. Please, that no. Would be, please, that God, would... no.
And it's kind of a bummer, especially because X-Shot's really been on a roll lately.
Mm-hmm. Like, this one just feels out of touch, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I it's in touch with their bottom line, I guess.
It's in touch with their bottom line, just not with what's more socially acceptable nowadays. Now, say, for example, this was like 10 years ago. I don't think anyone would have batted an eye, really, to be honest.
Now people like, are waking nowadays, up to this as being literal child gambling.
Yeah.
All right. In order to leave time for us to dig into the Nerf Pro Strife X, I think we should move on to everybody's favorite game. What's that blaster? Where one member of the team picks an official Nerf blaster and reads a slightly modified version of its description to the rest of the team. Everybody has an opportunity to guess it. If we guess it with no hints, everybody guessing gets 4 points. We have 3 lifelines available to us if we can't get it right off the bat. They are the original retail price. I say these in a different order every time. The original retail price, the original release year, and the original stock capacity of the blaster. This week it is Vile's turn to pick something from his stash of pre-selected blasters.
Don't worry, my coffin's ready.
No, you'll probably get
last
this
time
one.
Around we had Not Enough Nerf on as a guest who became the first guest to make it onto the scoreboard with 3 points, which put me significantly behind everybody except the guests, because I now have 19 points, and everybody else scored 3, putting Vile at 20, Jolt at 27, and Grimms at 22, because we've been giving you points.
Okay, I was gonna say, how did I get
we just didn't want, you've missed a few episodes, we didn't want you to fall too far behind.
All right, I was so gonna say, when did
crew,
I...
if the crew got it, we just gave it to you.
Cool.
That way you still have it. I mean, you're ahead of me.
Yeah, I'm ahead of Vile too.
Well, today we could get even more ahead of Vile because it's Vile's turn to pick.
Everybody's gonna get this one. Come on now.
And just as a reminder, when you modify the name, say what you're not saying. Like, say what the thing is that you're not saying.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it as blank and then whatever that right after way you know that exactly. That's what I'm changing.
Yep.
All right, you're all ready?
Yep.
All right. Blank series blasters are the ultimate in blaster performance. Featuring upgraded distance and the revolutionary blank ammo type, this is the final word in today's blaster technology. When your mission requires heavy coverage, the blank name of blaster brings the power you need. An elite in your hands with a blank accessory, and total control over your rate of fire. Unleash a non-stop stream of blank ammo type by holding down the trigger and sliding the blank feature rapidly back and forth. That's it.
Okay. Okay, so it's a Springer with slam fire, right?
It sounds like it.
Yeah. All right. Revolutionary ammo type.
I'm assuming Rival?
It's either Rival or Ultra.
Because they always say Rival series, don't they? And also...
It feels Rival. I mean, it could also be Ultra.
Revolutionary. It also kind of makes it sound like the Revonix 360.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. But I don't think they ever referred to it as Vortex series. Did they?
No, remember, series was after a blank. I put series in there so you knew that I was, that's what that blank was for.
Oh, okay.
I tried to say blank and then whatever it was I removed afterwards. So yeah, series is not actually in that.
Okay, so it very well could be Vortex then. Okay. Because they did say something about a feature to get it to function. So it does make it sound like it's one of their other ammo types probably rather than elite. At least in my mind, that is. I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, and so the coverage thing hints at a higher capacity.
Yeah, so that's I almost am kind of in line with Jolt with the Revonix 360 because it was so high.
Revonix or Pyragon or something. Could you read the description again?
Yeah.
All right, so blank series of the blaster. Blasters are the ultimate in blaster performance, featuring upgraded distance and the revolutionary blank ammo type. This is the final word in today's blaster technology. When your mission requires heavy coverage, the blank name of the blaster brings the power you need. An elite in your hands with a blank accessory and total control over your rate of fire. Unleash a non-stop stream of blank ammo type again by holding down the trigger and sliding the blank feature rapidly back and forth.
Okay, we're going to have to use a lifeline, I think, to break it down between...
Do we want to do release here?
No. I would say we want to do capacity.
Capacity was the other one I was going to say, yeah. Because it definitely, if it's 30... If it's 36, it would be Revonix 360. I think 360.
The Paragon is 40 in the drum. Or technically 42 if you chamber one, and then the thing actually holds 41.
Yeah, but that won't be the official...
Yeah. Officially it's 40.
Are we going to go with the lifeline?
Let's go with capacity.
Let's go with that.
Okay. Official dart capacity was 25.
Oh, what the hell?
25?
Wait, what even is 25? Is one of the drums 25?
Well, yeah, there are some that are 25.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. Very interesting.
Endless stream.
Could be the Rampage.
Could be.
Didn't we just do that?
No, we did the Raider.
The 30. Oh. Rampage.
Oh, the Elite Darts. Remember, Elite Darts were new over Streamlines as well, and those were considered revolutionary at the time, too. So that could totally fit in that. They were considered more long distance, if you remember.
This is true. Yeah. This is true. That was the whole thing.
I think Rampage. My vote's on Rampage.
You know what? Let's go with it. I'm too tired to try and press further.
I'm fine
with that
because the Rampage came with the 25 round. Because
it's either going to be like the Rampage.
It was one of the original releases with the Elite line as well.
I think it's funny because you're all like, I'm just too tired. This is good enough.
No, that makes sense.
Like the only other things with 25
I am tired,
that would be like revolutionary would be like.
I think that is right.
Because I almost thought Ultra won there, but it's not a Springer, so...
I think it's interesting that the word elite is in the description in a way that's not needing to be muted.
Oh, well.
Yeah, all right. We're going with Rampage.
I'm fine with that. We're going with Rampage.
You would be correct.
Yeah.
Let's go. All right.
So the reason I did not remove elite is because it didn't refer to the brand. It was saying an elite in your hands.
Right.
Yeah. With a 25 round with a drum, basically like a 25 round drum and total control over your rate of fire. Basically, you're an elite because you have so much ammo.
That makes sense.
So I did not remove it as sort of that key, actually, because it was kind of funny when y'all were instantly going back and forth. Oh, maybe it's this, you know, it's this one or this one. And I was kind of like, wow, that one should have instantly been like a first, like, well, it's of the elite line. But y'all coasted over it. And I left it in there because I didn't want to do ammo type because that would be elite darts, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
So. Wart. I'm going to laugh. But you know what? That puts me only in second to last place. Not enough nerf. You're trailing behind. You're picking
enough,
up here.
You gotta be a guest a lot more if you're going to catch up, man.
Would be kind of funny if we just gave him points whenever we got it.
Yeah, because he made it on the board. You just got to make it on the board. That's the secret. Okay, but I did overtake Vile. But you know, next time I'm up, he can take it back.
Coming for you, KT.
Goodness. All right. Well, so that puts me 22, Vile 20, Jolt 30, Grim 25. Going strong. Okay, moving on. to the big news. Nerf finally has released a short dart blaster. It's kind of hard to even know where to start with this because it's like...
There's so much to digest and process with this one.
There's a lot going on.
It's also been a long time coming at this point. It's just kind of like...
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Because one thing I will get into at the least, I guess, to start with, it's kind of funny. I see a lot of comments saying, like, this would have been good 5 years ago. Well, the right. funny thing is development started 5 years ago, and then it went right. into development hell. So, like, it's pretty late, actually, from what it was intended to launch. So it's just funny that people got yeah. it right on the nose in the comments a lot of the times, accidentally.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, the world did get kind of turned upside down for a couple
yeah,
years
there.
Yeah, there
was like
and,
a
yeah.
whole pandemic in between.
Yeah, now, you know, yeah, there's that the one least. Little thing that
well,
just kind of...
Well, and it seems like it's pretty closely tied in with Nerf Ball, which is not a game that you can really, like, have people publicly playing.
Yeah.
With a crowd of people watching during the middle of the worst of a global pandemic. So lots of reasons that something like this would have gotten held up in development, for sure.
Also, I just want to say quickly, I know the Verge article, they asked, and the people at Nerf said that this design was in no way influenced by anyone in the community or any other company. Cut the BS, Nerf.
Yeah.
You're lying and you
yeah.
know it.
Well, and they said that, like, the decision to do it had nothing to do with other things going on in the hobby. And I mean, like, if they started it 5 years ago... Like, you can sort of make an argument for that, but, like, products were also
all of
being
the upgrades of it are literally,
ago.
Like, the most common community-made upgrades for the Strife. It's designed by people from the community. Short darts were invented by the community. Cut the crap, Nerf.
Right.
I think kind of where they're trying to go with that is kind of like with that legal speak type of thing, because they can insinuate yeah. that it wasn't influenced by other manufacturers because right. they started before they were a thing. Sort of, not quite. I can't remember if the Mark 1 was out at the time. But I do know, at the very least in that regard, if development did start then, sure, it could have been later down the line
right.
done by that. But part of the also thing to go off of is that since it was developed by hobbyists who were in the hobby at the time, not necessarily, you could say that it wasn't necessarily directly influenced by outside influences if they're just taking stuff they already know, like Nick Rari, for example, who's someone who's openly admitted to working on the project and Open Flywheel Project. Both, you can tell in the design language that some of their touches on how they would mod blasters are in the final product, so yeah. they could almost in that regard claim it as the designer's own ideas rather than necessarily outside influence.
However, yeah, I
am kind of agreeing, though. It's very clear that it does take outside influence. I'm just trying to explain. I
it
think
takes
from a,
Talon
that's
Mags,
probably
which is...
their perspective from the legal speak perspective. If that
again, Talon least. Mags, though, that's another company's product. And half-length
exactly.
darts were absolutely not invented by Nerf. We have
no, they definitely weren't. The Steffens darts predate
Steffens.
Well,
yeah,
and this is another one of those situations where we have another magazine appearing on the scene, which is like almost a Talon, but not quite a Talon.
And I've also seen that some people have reported that it doesn't necessarily 100% fit everything due to the lip on the edge. However,
yeah.
of course, you could just sand it down, and you're good.
Well, so. and that's the thing, right? So, like, it's like a slightly different standard in a lot of different ways. Which is the same situation we have with Dart Zone, where like a lot of their mags are kind of more closely based on the Katana, but they're all Talon compatible more or less. And like blasters have to have like the double catch to like hold the man regardless of which type they are. And it's like this sort of convolutes that more. I'll be curious to see it get in more people's hands because, you know, Out of Darts is like a little bit limited in what they can say.
Yeah,
about
especially
its compatibility
since
with other magazines
since
they're
sponsorship
sponsored, so it, right? Yeah. Which is totally understandable.
Very much so.
But it's going to take a while before. But, you know, like they and The Verge had similar things to say about the magazines where it's like this magazine really seems to fit the Strife best. And like it works with other stuff mostly. And like most other magazines work with this. Mostly it sucks to have it be a little more complicated, but like it's also nice to have magazines that seem like perfectly fit to your blaster, even if it's just one type. And they're so cheap. Oh my
yeah,
god,
they're ridiculous.
Yeah,
so
the
cheap.
Thing I was gonna cheap. Say is even if it turned out that like these mags really work really dang well in here and others not so much, I mean, at the very least you can do it, because the thing that kind of pops up in my mind is, for example, back when the
Magan grip pistols were getting really popular. Every Chinesium company was coming out with one, and each one had its own mag standard, and people were happily gobbling them up and buying into the new mag standard for that one blaster. Like, I think, like, the Fire Rat, for example, or
the that was popular.
Yeah, so it's just kind of
And here's the possibility, right? Is Nerf comes out with this new magazine. It's very similar. Like, the geometry isn't that far off of the magazines that we already have. So we already have a lot of, like, 3D printable magwells that are designed that are close. What if people just start tweaking their magwells so you can print a version that fits the Nerf magazine, and now you can buy magazines for $5?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I think is the benefit, because worst comes to worst, all you have to do is go to the hardware store, get some sandpaper, and sand it down. And little Timmy, who bought, like, this thing trying to get into the modding scene, can now immediately put all these mags in all of his Talon-fed blasters, because all he had to do was remove the lip off of it. And he bought all these mags and got a full loadout, and each mag was only $5. Because maybe his parents, for example, won't let him buy from, like, an online website, so he could only get the mags this way or whatever.
Well, and what I'm specifically saying, though, is that for 3D printable blasters, you don't even have to modify the magazines. You can modify the blaster one time and work with, and specifically buy the Nerf mags.
Exactly.
We have the ability to do that, just have a new magwell that fits a new thing. You can take an existing blaster design, a caliber and a skewer, whatever, and just replace two parts.
Oh, yeah, and now, it's not even 100% incompatible with Talon-fed stuff. There are certain hobby Talon-fed blasters that are already confirmed to work with it, so it's, like, cool.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. Here's my big question that I have about this right now. They decided to base this on the Strife, and the Strife is really an iconic blaster for so many different reasons. It's sort of...
Because it was cheap. That's what it is.
It was cheap.
It did what it needed
to do. Easy to modify. It did what it needed to do. It was very minimalist, and yet it had attachment rails. It was very customizable. And so that sort of became the blaster that people ran with.
It also should be noted that the Strife is incredibly ugly.
I don't disagree. We talked about this last episode, too.
It's weird. It's kind of like an acquired taste. I've modded Strifes for so long at this point. I like the way they look in some weird, distorted, like, weird beer goggles kind of way.
Well, I like the asymmetry of it, so...
What I'm arguing is that effect is called nostalgia.
Yeah,
We've developed this, like, iconic image of the Strife, where, like, I think that Jolt is right that it is objectively... not very attractive,
especially balance. The front end.
It's funny.
The front
it's
end
stumpy.
Is disgusting.
It's very strange, but we have plenty of reason to have positive feelings towards it.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, my question here is, what is that the only reason that they chose this? There's a lot of different reasons to do it. One is that a lot of the work is already done in some ways. Not that I think the design team did an amazing job of what they were trying to do here.
Oh, yeah.
But there are so many modded Strifes in the world. Like, it's very known how to do this. And so what their job really is to figure out, like, what is the right way for Nerf to do this to present it as a finished product? But is the choice of the Strife more about nostalgia, or is it more about the performance possibilities of?
I think
of a blaster
I would say it's nostalgia.
Form?
Definitely nostalgia.
I would almost. This is going to be an interesting take. I'm going to vote it's both. And the reason I say that is because of the understanding I have of the timeline of how the stuff went that I've picked up on off of little tidbits we've picked up over time. Because we know for a fact now that the development started 5 years ago. And if we scroll back about 5 years ago, we have publicly available images from about 2019, 2020 of them trying around the time they patented the one motor flywheel blaster of a half dart powered one motor flywheel blaster that takes talons that fires half dart AccuStrike darts. So, I mean, it's clear that they definitely spent some R&D time for a while trying to come up with something different. So they definitely invested money into other ideas. So it's not necessarily that it was the cheapest option, but
it
also
might be that they had to like rush something because it ended
that's
up being
what I'm
that
getting.
The,
that's kind
the,
of what
yeah,
I'm getting to, because there was a pandemic. And then the other thing I've had heard insinuated is that it was very hard to get legal on board. Whereas I'm assuming something like Gelfire was easier to get them on board for. So maybe that was their stopgap in between or something. I have no clue. That's
whatever it is. It's entirely possible that what
but
happened
the other
is,
thing
is that
was insinuated
got,
by
by people who've worked on it is that the timeline did get bumped up substantially quicker than their normal development cycle towards the end. So what I'm assuming is what happened is, since both the project people that I'm aware of who are on the project are familiar with the Strife and it's more cost effective and it's safer, they probably just went with it because it fits all the boxes. It's nostalgic. People might like it. They know it like the back of their hand. Legal would be easier on board. Yeah, it fits every box that they
need. If you like trying to like kind of playing off some of the things you even said, even about like financially like viable for it, right? Because when we saw the original Nerf ball leaks and we all saw modded Strifes, what were they running? They were running worker half dart, you know, adapters that had the lever on it, because, you know, we saw some people getting mad of the, or like who wanted the original mag location, but for the release for the mag. And if you look at the X, it looks surprisingly like the modded Strifes that they were taking those original images from that we got.
The only thing that's different is the battery stock that was on them is now internal. It's just built into the stock location.
Yeah, and it's just a clipped on battery. And it, even if you look at the extended like battery that sticks out the side, that looks, it, I mean, even in Out of Darts video, it looked exactly like an expanded, you know, battery pack, like a 3D printed one. It looks almost identical. The heel on it, it looks exactly like the printed heels that you can get.
It looks exactly like the Out of Darts one, to be honest.
Right.
And those were the ones we saw in the leak, were the Out of Darts heels.
If you look at every single thing that's on this, it is very easy for them to take that and apply it to an existing design like a Strife, which, you know, how many times did they re-release the Strifes and, you know, the Strifes and the
modules? They've done it enough where to the fact that they actually redesigned the entire mold and produced it in a different country. It sold that well.
Exactly. It is. It's a very for investments as well, because even if it is like whether it's legal team or whether it's suits that are higher up or whatever, there's going to have to be something for them to look at this and say, what is the bottom line, right?
Yeah,
at the end
especially
of the day,
since we've been seeing them being more careful with their financial decisions now with how Magic the Gathering and other stuff is going lately.
Yeah.
It makes sense, like it's a clear choice.
Yeah, and that's the thing I was looking at. I was like, well, the Strife is an easy one because there was a lot of stuff that was already available. Again, heel, the battery, even the shape and the design looking just like a 3D printed design out there. Even the 180 motors that they're running in there, the expanded little, you know, motor cover. I mean, that was a typical mod for most people back when 180s were the thing to do. You just slapped on a bigger window or
this just motor looks cover. Like a blaster straight out of 2016 modding, which is
The battery. Can I just touch on this for a moment? I'm going to say that the battery on this blaster is the biggest advancement in our hobby in the last 5 years.
100%.
Yeah, the battery is a huge deal.
And you know why? When I got into this hobby, I didn't have a soldering iron. I didn't have any knowledge of electronics. I have modded some flywheel blasters. I am not good at soldering. It cost a lot of money to get into it, and I am terrified of LiPo batteries. I am so freaking terrified that I'm going to short something because I have to build it myself, and I am very bad with electronics. So the cost of entry to flywheel modding has always been enormous. Now, it's flat. It's there. You don't have to buy a LiPo. You don't have to buy a charger. It charges safely because it's in a contained brick. You don't have to worry about like it getting punctured or shorting as easily. It's got all the safety mechanisms.
Yep.
This is out of the box, ready to go, 3S LiPo. That is huge.
One of the things I'm curious about, too, is I have a feeling we're going to start seeing people take this particular Strife and just have like a modular cage system in it where like you want to try out different wheels and stuff with the 3S LiPo.
But why would you want to is the question.
Well, just to try different options. Like if you're interested in really tuning to try to achieve something specific.
That's fair.
And now you don't have to worry about freaking out about the batteries.
This is one of the big things that I liked about this blaster is that the cage and the wheels. This is market improvement over everything else Nerf has ever done for a flywheeler.
They're great selections.
It has a proper dart guide. It has balanced flywheels and a cool material, apparently. They're like glass-filled nylon? They're concave. They have 180 motors, which are apparently better for like heat dissipation. Sure, it makes a gigantic, ugly bulge. Which, like, the Strife was already ugly, and arguably they've made it uglier, but still, like, this is... They actually designed it properly. It's a well-designed flywheeler.
I guess the point I'll get into as to why I was saying I kind of like it, I'll weigh on this from, it's slightly under the safety standpoint, but it's also from a standpoint of mental health. In my case, this is a little bit personal, but I don't mind since it can do some good. I have chronic severe anxiety, for example, and this leads to a lot of number of problems that affect how I live my life. One of the problems is, as a one of the common things you hear about lipos is just take the plunge. All you have to do is be safe with it. I know how to be safe with a lipo. I am very knowledgeable on how the stuff works at this point, and I've modded more stripes than I can count at this point for lipo. But my anxiety, as it's gotten worse over time, I can't even use my modded flywheeler blasters hardly at all anymore because of how bad my anxiety gets just having to deal with the lipos. Like, I have less fun substantially when I'm using my flywheel blaster now compared to me taking the links out on the field that I have, that my friends built me.
I can imagine. I stress enough about my lipos, and I don't
have
that. You know,
yeah.
I, as of yet, have never brought one to a war because I'm terrified of them.
I have friends who also have these issues, and I also know of a litany of people who are just not, they can't trust themselves to take care of a lipo. And the amount of people I've gotten DMing me saying, yo, I can get into flywheelers now, this is great, is like, it's been very eye-opening to see that I'm not the only person who feels this way. I would love to not have the anxiety and still be able to use flywheelers in a normal way. But as it stands right now, this looks to be like one of the only ways I could probably get back into doing flywheel modding. But I see that as a good thing for myself.
I appreciate this a ton. I mean, I'm really into accessibility in this hobby. I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. And this is a really, really great angle on that, actually, that had not occurred to me. It really does. Well, because, you know, I've already talked about how this makes it available to, one of the things I bump into a lot is kids and teens whose parents just don't want a lipo in the house.
Oh yeah.
This is so much more acceptable.
That was one of the biggest uphill battles I had to fight as a younger kid when I was getting into modding in, like, say 2015. I would try and explain this to my dad, and he's like, these things can blow up, right? If you don't know what you're doing. And I was like, yeah.
Well, yeah.
And he was like, then you don't get the funny Nerf blaster. I was like, I fought so hard as a teen to get convince my dad it was safe enough to have in the house.
I would also get into dexterity disabilities because, you know, a lot of people kind of disregard people with issues with their hands and people who have limited dexterity with, like, doing small stuff. Modding flywheelers takes a lot more with actually doing it. Like, a springer a lot of times is not as you know, difficult. It's much easier a lot of times because the stuff's bigger. You're not having to deal with stripping wires and tinning wires and try even doing the XT60 plugs. In some cases, you don't realize that for people who have limited dexterity, that even just getting those off is actually very difficult. And
this
battery just clips in. And I'm really big about people, like, as well, both for mental and physical disabilities, being able to have accessibility like that. I look at it in the same sense that, you know, the blaster, and we saw people kind of on the fence about that price. Most people were going, oof, that price. And it was like, yeah, but, you know, in the old days of modding, that was pretty typical when, you know,
If you were buying a charger and a lipo and all the materials to do the thing, you're probably paying around.
Yeah,
that.
I can literally say I sold
a strife at Andwar 2022 for $120 that I built myself. Of course, there are going to be a multitude of people in the comments saying, of course, well, you are an individual who built this and bought stuff at retail price. They get it for cheaper. Sure, that's the case. But the legal team that's, like, trying to protect their bottom line, when they look at what the market and they see strifes are selling for $120, they're going to take that as, we can sell modded strifes for $120.
Yeah.
And if I weigh in the $50 to $60 smart lipo charger I bought with it and the two lipos I bought that were like $20 each, I mean, you still get pretty close even if you take out the manufacturing costs. So it's
There's a lot of, I mean, obviously there's going to be pros and cons to everything. With any blaster, whether it's a pro line or, you know, typical consumer line stuff, it is always going to be like that.
I would actually categorize this as typical consumer.
Yeah, and this kind of is.
This is my take on the blaster, is that this is not a blaster for us.
No.
I definitely don't think this is.
Casuals.
Yeah,
that's the thing
really
that
not.
I saw a lot of people, like, complaining, like, it's $120 strife, I don't need it, I've got all the stuff that does the same thing. Yeah, you do. because you know how to mod and you've been in this community for forever. But someone who's just going on like a Walmart shelf, they don't have all that stuff. This is something that'll get them into the hobby. This is for the beginner. Right. And for that, yes, it is perfect. The designer did a beautiful job. That this is the perfect starter blaster.
What do we do in this hobby to avoid creating a stigma against people who are showing up for their first Nerf war and they have the Nerf Strife, the Nerf Pro Strife X? I feel like that has already... I'm actually surprised that we didn't have more of this, but they're definitely developed, like, after the initial wow of the Nexus wore off. I think there was some stigma about, like, showing up with the unmodded Nexus.
I mean, I will admit, even personally, I was one of those guys, which I've since kind of toned down on that because I definitely see that it wasn't a good thing. I have my views on the Nexus that I personally don't like it, but I'm not going to shame anyone for showing up with one now because I understand it's like, not everybody can build themselves a modded Retalicon or like make a cool brass breached long shot or something
that,
else or like
that is,
get
that
a
is the, that was the access point, right? To the hobby, like at that point. And what if
And now the access
now
point
the access...
is on store shelves. And now it's from the major brand.
Yes.
The main brand is now doing it, which is gonna bring so many people in. We saw this with the Nexus. I have friends who got into the hobby because they found the Nexus Pro on store shelves. Can you imagine what it's going to do with Nerf? The freaking Nerf logo on it?
So how do we... So I guess my question is, how do we avoid hobby blowback against people who buy into this ecosystem? Because
that's the
ever-growing
question, because it's definitely a hard point. You can't just wrangle an entire group of people necessarily that easily. But I definitely think we should actively encourage people to be not necessarily so harsh on people for such things, because, I mean... one point I can see using, for example, is the thing that goes into my mind. The thing people forget about, say, the Nexus and the Aeon Pro, is that those are known loss leader products. They're taking a loss on that to get the word out to increase their brand. Whereas something like the Mark One, that thing was like, what was it, like $150 or more?
It was $180, but $30 of that, I'm guessing, was the dark pack that came with it.
Yeah, and then
later.
The Mark One point...
The Mark 1.1 was a dart pack, and it was exactly the price of a dart pack less, so...
Yeah, and then we also had the Mark 3. Of course, the argument can be said that the Mark 3 had an XT60 connector, and it also had Picatinny, and
but
it
also
had...
But the Mark 3
also
had numerous issues, like the rev switch burning out,
numerous issues that the,
talent-taking issues...
The hobby ended
that's the
up
thing
fixing
about
those, and people were fine with it at the time.
See,
the
that's
thing
the thing
I...
about this Strife, though, is it from all the reports we've gotten, it just freaking works.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm holding off on that until it's in more hands.
Yeah, of course.
I think that that's a valid point to make, but I don't want to get too deep into that because we don't. Two people have seen it, and one of them has.
There are more people
one of
with them
was
in
sponsored.
Hand, so we'll see soon. I think Walcom has one, Brandon Diaz, Barrett.
Realistically, by the time anybody is hearing this podcast, a lot of those videos will be out, at least initial reactions to them.
Mm-hmm.
So we probably don't even need to bother getting into that right now because there's other places
for
that. But I want to dip back a little bit on some other design questions as they relate to the question of like, nostalgia and using this blaster as an entrance point. One of the things that got cut from the show, you know, this Strife retains its stock attachment point, which I think is a no-brainer. There are so many stocks that already exist. It gives them the opportunity to potentially sell one themselves down the road. But they changed to some mystery rail that doesn't accept anything that exists currently. It's not Rival Rail. It's not Picatinny. It's not Nerf Rail. And they also took off the N-Strike barrel lug.
I have something to say here, and this is going to be something not a lot of people have probably thought about. So when we look at the Strife, yeah, it's freaking ugly. So what's the first thing people do? They put a bunch of body kits on it.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing about those body kits. There are so many of them, and so many look like firearms.
They look like real firearms. Absolutely.
And I'm guessing, I would bet money that part of the reason why the N-Strike barrel lug was removed and the shell was fused, so it's no longer the muzzle, like that bottom rail is no longer a separate piece of, from the shell, and the rail was changed and whatever. I would bet you that was done to prevent people from installing like those stupid MP5 kits.
Because that's kind of part of the workers. Things I was going into as well from my own hypothesis. Mine kind of blends into that in two ways. The one way I see it is, one, if they are doing Nerf ball and they want to make this and make accessories for it in the future, InStrike stock or InStrike like rail isn't strong enough, and Picatinny is a legal nightmare to deal with. So obviously the only option at that point for Hasbro is make their own standard and make it good. And the other thing I can see with the other point I was going to get into as to why they probably changed the rail and the front muzzle to be different. The other thing that came to mind other than the firearm like body kits was burnout of motors. Because if a dart gets stuck in a long barrel with a flywheeler and then another and a kid fires another dart and then they fire another dart, burnout motors. That's right. That's the thing I'm thinking of, is it's to make sure the potential of that happening is less likely, and a kid is more likely to say, hey, there aren't darts coming out the barrel, and then they can just reach in and grab the...
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm sure there's numerous safety mechanisms in there to prevent the lipo from being overdrained and stuff like that as well. That might also help
still
with
just,
motor
it
burn.
Still just helps avoid the functional issue of kid try shoot dart, dart not come out,
yes.
Kid get frustrated.
Fire again, yeah.
Yeah, even if the electrical aspects.
My
safe.
One comment on the InStrike barrel lug as well is as sad as Coop would be seeing this removing of the tactics. Let's be honest here, with how the Stripes front end is shaped, unless you put like actual like body work onto it, extra pieces from kits, there's basically no muzzle attachment that looks particularly good on it.
Yeah. There's actually what's funnily enough is the only muzzle I really like for the Stripe doesn't require the locking point.
I can't remember
if it was Nick Rari or who brought them, but someone at like End War 2018 came up with the novel idea is you take a Caliburn plunger tube, you cut down the middle of the Caliburn plunger tube at a 30 degree angle, and then you sand smoothen it out, and then you take a translucent like paint that you would put on like automotive stuff, so you make it like blue, red, pink, whatever. So then you have this cool sci-fi muzzle that just slips over the circular port on the front of the Strife and has this cool look, and it's translucent and stuff, and it also doesn't affect performance. And I like the way it looks, and it doesn't require it, and since it looks like it's that's the same size, I can still do that.
Well, I mean, I think that that makes a lot of sense, that there's a lot of good safety reasons not to include the barrel lug. I did make a joke, you mentioned Coop, I made a joke in the Discord earlier that was, you know, someone a couple years ago maybe removed the barrel lug just for the memes of getting Coop to say it when he reviewed it.
There is no InStrike barrel.
And then right before the blaster comes out, Coop retires. Must feel bad.
I genuinely hope that wherever Coop is, whatever he's doing, that he sees that it that this exists. I hope he sees it.
You know what? I said I wouldn't do any more reviews, but if I ever get a hold of one, I'll do a review, and I will say there is no InStrike barrel lug, because I do point out the different parts of stuff.
If this came out closer to a good time to make like an April Fool's joke or something for this show, I would absolutely suggest that we make a whole episode, except it's literally just us pointing at and saying there is no InStrike barrel lug, and that's it. That's the entire episode.
That would have been hilarious.
Here's the real big question, I think, you know, with so many people saying, so Nerf Pro Strife X, right? And this whole discussion about, like, was that intended to mean that it's the 10-year anniversary of the Strife? And there's all this discussion, there's a Strife from 2012, there's a Strife from 2013. I think that that's largely a semantic question. It makes sense to call it that. It's close enough to the 10-year anniversary. I think that the 2012 thing, so like on the wiki it says 2013, but there's all these reviews from 2012. I'm fairly confident it's like car model years, where like the 2013 car actually comes out in 2012 and it's available through that year. So its official released year is probably 2013, even though it started being available and getting reviewed.
I remember one of the earliest reviews that actually got them as a consumer was Nerf Boy Productions, if anyone remembers that name. I can go look up when he got a hold of his, because I remember his was like one of the first on
Nerf Boy Productions. Okay, let's get you back to bed, Grandma.
Oh, what do you know? 10 years ago, December 11th, 2012. So it was like
right next.
So there you go.
It was
really
2013.
It seems like it came out for its Christmas season in 2012 and effectively like,
yeah, they always
really
call that
widely available.
Anytime someone's talking about releasing a product and it comes out in that period, they always refer to it as holiday and then the next year. So it would have been like
exactly.
Holiday 2020 or 2013 is what they would have referred to it as.
Also, just quick shout out to Dan J. Savard for this excellent meme in our Discord of the Strife X with the X logo and Elon Musk. That got a genuine laugh out of me.
Nah, you gotta make me go through and put it in the podcast, man. I gotta write this down. People need to see it.
I'll just mute Joel. I just checked this shitpost channel. Apparently, Walcom copied my meme in his video. Damn.
What?
Okay. Anyway, so please join the PNNN Discord for great memes about things
stuff.
With X in the name.
The
real question I want to ask is, halfway through the Strife's life, they start developing this pro blaster. The whole pro world sort of like explodes in the meantime. This thing comes out in 2023. It's pretty clear that it's intended to be part of this Nerf ball ecosystem that they're developing, this game that it's supposed to be. It makes sense that you would create a game like this and you would give everybody the same equipment. But what place does a blaster like this actually have? We've talked already about how, you know, it's not really intended for hobbyists who are already capable of modding their own blasters. But when you have a blaster like the Omnia that exists that has not the exact same feature set,
it's
but
got technically
a very
more features.
Similar one that costs significantly less but might have less visibility because it's not made by Nerf. What is the place of this in, I guess I really want to ask less what is the place of it in our hobby, but more what is the place of it like in the market?
So what I think here is that Nerf has always had their version of something, and then there's always been kind of a cheaper version. So for your Retaliator, you've got, like, say, a Busby Revolution.
I won't tell Mongoose Jake you said that if you don't.
Are you kidding?
I love the Revolution. It's actually a great blaster. Love that thing. And the X-Shot, whatever the frick it's called. So, but you're paying less money, and you're getting a lesser quality product. And I think that's still kind of where this is, because I would argue that the Nerf Pro Strife is a more viable product than some of the Dart Zone offerings. I mean, like, lesser in, like, plastic quality, and sometimes you'll have more defects, or, because one of the things I've seen is a couple people have gotten the Omnia now, and just like the Mark III, it's got some small issues. It looks like it's got the same rev switch, so I'd watch out for that burning out, and it appears that the spring for the mag catch for Talons is too weak and will let mags drop out a little too easily. So, like, it's one of those things where you're paying less, but you're also technically getting a less perfect product.
I would argue, technically, that that's probably something that they'll be ironed out over time, and it sounds like something Dart Zone would probably warranty, because I have seen them do stuff over things like
that. You would think that, but then things like the Deuce existed where it caused an actual flaw in the blaster, and it took them, like, 6 months or a year or something to do anything about it.
Also, Dart Zone, I requested springs. Where's my springs?
What's the deal? So that's the thing.
But what I was going to say is that the Omnia definitely does have a place with the enthusiast hobby. I also know that the battery, if I remember right, I think it's partially protected. I can't remember. I know it's a lithium ion rather than a lithium polymer.
It's the same ones that they have with those gel blasters, and it looks like it's
and you can already buy you can already buy more of those as well as the thing. And it also has its select fire. I think probably ultimately what we'd see is it's going to come down to probably preference on both aesthetic and also if you like Dart Zone more, kind of, and you're more of a min-maxer for, like, bang for the buck, or if you really just want something that comes from the mothership, I guess.
So what I've seen from people who've already got the Omnia is it takes a very long time from the press of the trigger for the first dart to actually exit the blaster. On single burst and, like, full auto.
So it's similar to the Regulator in that way, where I know a lot of people like the Regulator. Sorry, Luke Triton, I know you love it, but it's crap, because it basically is only useful in full auto because of that trigger delay.
Luke Triton is one of the key people in the upset that the UK doesn't get most blasters demographic, so I think his tastes are somewhat colored by availability.
Maybe. Just maybe.
One thing I was also going to say there is I know at the very least I have some friends who have gotten a hold of the Omnia and actually played with it extensively, and from what they have said at the very least is that it seems to be something that isn't as bad once you kind of get the hang of it. So I'm assuming it's just something that people will get used to taking to account for, similar to how the Colonel Wasp 76 had a delay issue, I believe, and people kind of just figured out how to play with that.
I think that has a lot to do with the way that our reviews ecosystem works, where folks, yeah. Where we do a lot of knee-jerk reaction videos. You know, people were making, but I took a screenshot somewhere in our Discord of what my subscriptions list looked like on Family Foam Sports, on the Family Foam Sport YouTube subscription list. It was just like, you know, the Not Enough Nerf video, the Walcom video, and Foam Quest, like all these reaction videos next to the Out of Darts video about this. People are already talking about and reacting to and giving their thoughts on this blaster before anyone even has it in hand. And there's going to be a race now to do responses to the blaster in video form immediately after it comes out. And the race to get that video out means that you are putting your first thoughts to video and putting them out to the world before you've had time to do that adjusting, before you've had time to sort of get comfortable with the piece. And I think that can be detrimental to our understanding of how these blasters can actually be used.
Yeah, the review system with how it works, the review system is kind of almost a product of the YouTube algorithm in its current state.
Oh,
kind
100%, of. 100%. It's not even just YouTube. TikTok has the same problem. It's how things are distributed.
With my channel, for example, when I did reviews for a little bit, I intentionally would take a loss on the algorithm a little bit, so that way I could get a little bit more of a feel with it, like I did with the new rival stuff. The only, exemption to that was the Mark 1.2, which was a different case. However, I did make sure to make up for it by testing it quite heavily that day, and then I compared it to not only the Nexus, I compared it to the Mark 1.1 and the Mark 1 and the 1.2. So I had all of them in hand on set at the time and was able to actively compare them one after the other.
Yeah.
It's
hard, man. I remember one of the first times that I got a blaster before anybody else was the Roblox Bees, Bees blaster.
I remember that.
And I dug into that thing that day. I put a lot of work into it. I took all of this like secondary footage. The weather was perfect. I took videos of it like up in the trees and stuff, and I spent a ton of time with it, and I chronographed it outside, and I took multiple angles of video, and I threw this video together, and I got it up there, and it is viewed really, really well. I was actually the first person to review the blaster, and I went back and watched the video, and I don't agree with any of the stuff I said about it anymore. I have a completely different opinion on that blaster than I did at the time, and that's frustrating. You know, like, I would rather have had a few weeks to give it to my kids, to mess around with it, to do all this stuff, and I can give you a much better opinion. But mm-hmm. by then, the video will never get shown. I know that my opposite version of that would be the Elite Junior. I spent a lot of time on that because I knew that I'm uniquely positioned to talk effectively about it. And so I waited and spent a lot of time with it, and I feel like I put together one of the most complete and accurate and useful reviews on it, and it has like 300 views. So You really get burned. You really get burned by that.
I think, like, other than one or two points in my 1.2 video, actually, that's the only one where, had it been a good review, it would have aged like fine milk, because it's the situation with the 1.2, I feel like, has almost gotten worse in a lot of ways with certain things I've seen with them. Yeah. The only difference would be I would have pointed out that there are occasionally lucky 1.2s that you can get that actually work half okay. Like, there was one at Flux Labs I tried that didn't jam as much. Still wasn't great, but it didn't jam as much, so there was that.
And I hear there are a lot better when you remove that dart guide.
Oh yeah, for sure. There are just other problems alongside that, though, that it's just like, I still probably wouldn't take back the video. So I'm glad that I have that one good video that did all right, and I'm still half confident in what I said, at the very least.
Well, so we'll have to see what kind of videos we wind up seeing about the Pro Strife X, and again, our listeners by now have probably already seen a couple.
And
those are going to be the ones that are the most rushed. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be inaccurate. And we do have people in this space who have gotten quite good at making videos really fast. that have useful information in them, but it's still not the same thing as a video that is a review of a blaster that you've taken to multiple events, that you've put in other people's hands and asked other people's opinions of, and like spent time with it and tested it and let it break in and let it wear down and let the battery go through like 20 charging cycles before you actually say like, oh yeah, like it holds its capacity forever. There's so many questions. We already saw the internals video photo that we got. Embarrassing that I don't have the Verge article writer's name on hand. I really should. But you know, we already saw those internals photos, and there's so much dart dust in there, and we don't know how many shots that represents.
Yep.
How bad is it shredding the darts? We don't know, but we can see that something is going on. That's not abnormal for a blaster at this high, relatively high power to be doing, but that would be interesting information.
Oh yeah, for sure. One of the, I guess, weird quick shout out thing, I guess if we're talking about people who take a loss on their content when it comes to view count, for the sake of like actually viewing if stuff is viable, definitely I would say two people to check out for once they have the Strife X in their hand over time. I don't know if he still does reviews, but I know Boomstick does a lot of war testing with his before he gets a review out. And then the other person I was going to say is Jangular, since he really spends his time with it, digesting it for his Is It Tournament Ready
That's videos. So true. Jangular does great content in that area. Boomstick as well, although I'm fairly confident, and maybe Boomstick will pop into the comments to confirm or deny this, but that he really only does videos on 3D printed stuff now, and doesn't.
Yeah,
really
that kind
do...
of sounded about right, so I wasn't sure. And then I think Veray now kind of digests on some blasters a little more now.
Yeah,
than
I this feels like the kind of thing that might, because I know that
he's taking a break from doing
videos.
We
reported
videos
his
as
break,
often.
But I still think that we might see something on this. It would surprise me if we didn't get.
Those were the two channels I would check out, though. Probably is Jangular and Veray if you want a more in depth.
Jolt has tagged me with the name of the article writer, Sean Hollister. I typed that name so many times when I was working on the show. You'd think I'd have it in my brain now.
Mm-hmm.
But Sean Hollister of The Verge, who also allowed us to use images, photos that he took, which I really, really appreciate. But
yes, thank you. Speaking of those, I'd like to touch on the internals, some of the cool choices that they made.
Yeah, please.
One thing that you would think would have stayed the same was the trigger mechanism. But it didn't. They've changed to a geared pusher.
Yeah.
Which apparently has more actual push.
More travel.
Which is interesting. I wouldn't have called that.
I guess one of the reasons that makes sense is, like, OFP and them, around the time they started working for Hasbro, the Griffin, if I remember right, had just came out, and that was one of the big changes that had came with flywheeler blasters in that regard, is that the geared trigger pull had became a thing. So there could be some inspiration from the Griffin in that regard, and maybe it's potentially a subtle nod to that, if you will. I'm not quite sure.
I know it's it looks similar to what like the Amp had.
That too.
I was gonna say it. Gear also has a different feel to it, and it allows, because like if you look at how many teeth are on it, like the original Strife had a lever system, and the only way to really get more out of that is to extend how long that is, and that's not really gonna work. If you wanted an extra draw, like, you know, for how far you need that pusher to go, because they've already extended the pusher, you know, fairly far forward, but then they wanted it to also travel further as well. So
yeah,
it was
that's
kind of
true.
Like it's
the other thing is that I believe the I forget who told me this. I remember all you had to do was cut a slight bit out of the center of the hailfire, for example. And then if you put it that way, it could fire half darts, and it did it like butter. And I remember they were talking about how the gear system makes it easier to convert it to half darts than other blasters, if I remember.
What it is with the Hailfire is actually it already has about twice as much pusher throw as any other flywheeler. And that's because the cage is actually much further forward from the magwell. So it has to have that much travel. In fact, if the cage was right up against the magwell, the Hailfire would have enough pusher throw to fire half darts and full darts.
Okay.
Right. So, speaking of half darts, that is another aspect of this that we really should spend some time on. With a new half dart blaster, Nerf has also introduced a new half dart. And, you know,
quote unquote new.
Well, so I pointed this out in the show. If you mess around with an old AccuStrike dart, the foam is not that firm on those darts. We have very little to go on, but Luke described the foam as more firm, as like more like hobby foam, hobby dart foam. So clearly,
like
the
Gen
head
3 is what it looks like. Like, you know, the Gen 3 Plus, the super hard foam that's nice and durable.
Yeah, so clearly the head geometry is very recognizable if you're familiar with AccuStrike darts already.
Which brings up an issue pretty quickly. That issue is, if anyone remembers when AccuStrike darts first came out, this was a thing. I think there was even like a clickbait track video about it, where they don't work in long barrels. They cannot function in springers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nothing with a sealed breech will ever fire them properly. You have to have a ridiculously loose barrel, and then it's inconsistent and whatever. So, and this actually is something the Verge article talked about, is they asked about this, and the person at Nerf said that they have no plans to make any springers. There's none currently in development.
Well, okay, well, hold on. Before you go into that, somebody said that. Somebody said that in the chat, and I could not find that text in the article. They ask what the plan is, and they say that the Nerf representative just wouldn't say anything about other blaster.
What are you talking about? I read
where
the
is
article.
It? I know, I did too, bro. I wrote the script.
Jolt King's hallucinating, boys. He's finally gone crazy.
This is going in the show, by the way. This is going in the show. We're gonna figure this out together.
I'm pulling up the Verge article.
This settles it. Jolt did find the quote. I'm quoting the Verge article. The large tip could also make them less suitable for spring-loaded blasters with long barrels due to the friction, should they arrive at all. Quote, I think the expectation is there may be some issues, says Listenberger. He says that AccuStrike was specifically designed for motorized blasters, and there are no springers currently in development. That statement
alone
is interesting.
Something, the most interesting thing about that statement is the AccuStrike was specifically designed for motorized blasters because of all of the AccuStrike blasters, there was only one flywheeler.
Right.
It was a re-release of the Rapid Strike. Every single one was a springer.
Yep. They all looked like sniper rifles.
I read that and I was like, what? Then why didn't they come with some?
So I'm not the most like avid watcher of Walcom's channel anymore, but I remember when I used to watch him quite heavily back in the day, one of the biggest theories he was like, he used to always say around, or, which is kind of funny because this was around the 5 years ago mark, he was saying they took away their best dart, the AccuStrike line, and I have a feeling they did it for a reason type of thing, or I have a feeling that they had plans for this dart, etc. And I mean, technically he was right, I guess. I guess this just also further adds to that. It's like it was designed for flywheelers. We have example images from around 5 years. When did AccuStrike even come out? I need to look this up now.
What was it, 2017 or was it 2016?
2017 sounds about right, because I remember getting one in eighth grade year in like middle school. So like, let me see here. Yeah, it was spring 2017. So my graduating year of middle school when I went. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So now that we have multiple weights of worker darts and we have multiple designs of darts by dart zone, we have the little bamboo things, we have all kinds of different things, and now we have the Nerf darts. This is really the first off the shelf short dart specifically designed for flywheelers, right?
Pretty much, because I don't think even dart zone does their waffles in half
no,
barrel form.
They
right?
do not.
They don't.
No, they don't, because they are actually smart about this, where they make sure that their ammo is compatible with all of their blasters. So they use the small tips. And here's something. I know there are certain people who are all about the waffle heads and the full lengths will remain unnamed. When you design a blaster around a small tipped dart, you can do that. You can get the blaster to work better with those. Look at banned blasters cages, where if you put waffles in them, it'll burn out the motors.
Well, that's worker, actually. If anybody, I did some review videos and stuff as well. I tried my hand in it, and I did the Worker Phoenix. And the Worker Phoenix, the original one, the 1.0, performed better with worker darts, surprise, surprise, with the smaller tips, than cut down waffles. And there are people who use like, you know, half lengths. There are people who will cut down waffles for their flywheelers for a short dart flywheeler, and they swear by it. But what it really boils down to is the cage and flywheel geometry. That is really the important thing, because, you know, Luke and Perry also mentioned how you cannot run these in something like a Nightingale for the same reason, right? You know, you cannot do it because they're designed.
I'm wondering if it's almost like
tips.
A weird sidetrack thing that happened with our hobby, because if you remember, around the time that this stuff was ongoing, some of the first aftermarket, if you will, like third party darts that were coming out were like your Koosh and your E-Kind waffle tips. And so I'm wondering if, in conjunction, around the same time we were discovering concave flywheelers, they weren't as concave or high crushed per se necessarily as we can get now. I'm wondering if, just because they happened to work quite well together at the time, we just kind of got on the sidetracked idea that they were the best for flywheelers, and therefore that's just been the pervasive thought, I suppose. Because I remember, even, for example, such as people saying about on Dauntless that they made some of the difference was that they intentionally had dart separate waffle tips for flywheelers and worker darts for springers.
It's like no surprise when your blaster is designed to work with a waffle, it's going to work well with a waffle. Designed for a small tip, it's going to work better with a small tip. Funny how that works.
That's the real thing. We're looking here at going back to the magazines, where we know that the magazine seems to mate best with this blaster. It works with other stuff, but it prefers its own magazine. They've designed an ecosystem. They're less concerned. Like, you know, you mentioned that Dart Zone was, in fact, smart enough to make all of their blasters work with the same darts. Well, Nerf has also made every short dart blaster they've ever made works really well with their short dart, because they have one, right? So if they continue to build off of this same platform, if we get variations on this theme, it will continue to work this one dart that they make.
A thought that this is reminding me of is actually the Ultra line. They've done this to themselves before. I remember hearing, I don't remember where, but they had a very difficult time getting Ultra darts to perform out of springers because of how they are. And what they ended up settling on is basically a tightening ring at the front of the barrel. So the back is completely loose, and it only really makes contact with the dart for like a couple millimeters.
Interesting.
So it's a really short barrel too, which is why they have such high spring loads, I think, is because they got to get that performance out of the tiny, teeny, teeny barrel.
I'm sorry for the random laughter. It just dawned on me for his funniest part. Nerf? All right. Hear me out on this one. They've designed the blaster around these wider head darts. The hobby uses smaller tip darts.
Yes.
In the review, we saw that worker darts get lower velocity than these other darts in their own blaster. Mm-hmm. Nerf has effectively designed an ecosystem where, in air quotes, they can claim number one darts, period, for their own blaster, because it is custom tailored to actually perform well with that blaster best. So they aren't even lying if they say this dart is best for the blaster.
You cut down a Dart Zone waffle or a chili, you'll probably get equivalent.
I know, but I'm saying it's very close, at least. At that point, it's out for debate.
No, I hear you.
Because even out of darts,
I hear you, Graham.
Or not out of darts, but like other people. Yeah, you get the point. It's just kind of funny. It's like a...
What it sounds like to me more also is that they design the dart, and then they design the flagship blaster, which is almost always a flywheeler, and then they don't think ahead of that. And they're like, oh, wait, crap, how do we make this work in a springer?
I just find this funny, though.
Yeah, I mean, who's the no bullshit marketing now?
Hats off to whoever came up with this one, I guess.
Yeah.
Finally making number one darts, period, reality.
So, all right. This thing, we could talk about this for
oh, I could talk forever. About this for like hours, probably. There's so much to say.
But I love this. I love this. I have small complaints, very small complaints, things like the strife is ugly and the fact that they remove the end strike barrel lug and the darts won't work in springers. As far as I'm concerned, those are nitpicks compared to the gloriousness that is Nerf Pro. This is big. Congratulations to the designers that got this
huge
through
to
market.
To the designers.
Oh,
this is amazing, and you should be proud of yourself.
I have to admit, man, we say this isn't for us, but I still want one. There's a lot of appeal. I own LiPos. I manage LiPos. I have modded Strifes. I have modded Ravens. But this is way less of a pain in the butt. Just like if I just want to go out and play with a modded level flywheeler.
Yeah, like I said with my anxiety, USB-C. This is basically one of the only ways I'll be able to use flywheelers for the next foreseeable futures if I'm using one of these things. So
I already have a modded Strife
for a Nerf Strife X.
So, like it looks cool. I probably won't end up buying one just because I already have a modded Strife. But like, this is pretty cool. And like, I can point people who are just getting into the hobby. I can point them to that because that looks like a good purchase if you're just starting out. And I think that it's going to do a lot of good for our hobby.
Now we have something to point people who want to go like IMRs or Trustfires to instead. Because, like, the number one complaint I see from that camp is, I don't want LiPo because it's unsafe, but I'm... Because
before we didn't really have a quote-unquote perfect flywheel blaster to point people to that don't know how to mod. We had all the Springers, we have all the darts and stuff, like, you can just go buy a Nexus Pro and it'll do pretty okay out of the box.
Yeah.
I guess the closest thing to that would have been the Mark III since it took,
Even with the Mark III, Mark III was pretty good, but it had issues. It had a number of issues.
Yeah, I mean, again, we will have to wait and see how the Omnia really shakes down. I know that some people are having issues with it, but like for some people, that price point, those issues may not be as big enough of a deal.
I think with my biggest issue with it is the Omnia is obviously it's select fire that causes some of those issues that people might not like. And there are some people who personally like the mechanical feel of a semi-auto like a Strife. Like, really, this is still getting down to nitpicky stuff. Some people are like, well, I'll just buy an Omnia. Yeah, but do you like the mushy trigger? Do you want to have select fire? Are you even going to use select fire? Do you care that it has full auto?
I don't care about the select fire, man. Right. And also, I'm gonna be the one to say the controversial opinion. I think the Omnia is worse, like a worse looking in the looks department than the Strife X. I can't.
Hot take.
I just think that Omnia is pretty ugly. I actually like the Strife X a lot more in the appearance department. I know I'm like a weird opinion out
I love the asymmetry of it. I really do. I personally don't mind the Strife because I like asymmetrical blasters. I really like it.
Even if we can't agree on which one of these looks great, here's what I want to know. And this is how we're going to cap our show off tonight with a nice little gentle round robin question and answer discussion here. We last episode we talked about what older blasters would we like to see come back as reissues, like the Charge 92. This time I want to ask, what blaster would you like to see get the pro treatment? This is definitely different from the last question. What blaster is going to get either high, we know that they're not planning on doing Springers, but if you want to do a Springer, you understand what that would look like. It would be a remake of a Nerf blaster that performs like an X shot long shot or a Mark IV or whatever, or a flywheeler or maybe it's a different mechanism that has some other way to make it perform at pro levels. What would you like to see come back? Grim, it sounds like you're ready.
Okay, so my immediate first thought, of course, which doesn't work because it is a Springer, would have been the Stampede. But on that note, because that doesn't work, my next bet or next wish, I guess, would be Swarmfire, actually, because it would mate in perfectly with the Nerf ball line, can be one-handed, sprint auto electronic, so it has the rate of fire. Because it's a fast action gameplay, you could load half darts down the front of the barrel, for example. So it would fit in perfectly with such a thing if they could get the performance up. The other thing that would probably fall in line is something similar to like an half dart converted Ultra Springer, since we already know those have stupid light primes if you convert them to that. Something similar to what Jolt would have done in his workshop, for example. Those would make perfect sidearms, for example, for such a game, since they hit decent performance and light primes.
Ultra 5 is buttery smooth, great once you convert it to half darts, which granted is a pain in the butt to do, but once you do it, lovely.
So those are my votes. Swarmfire or something converted that would have those a light prime and front load.
Those are good votes. Who else has got one?
I'm going to let Jolt actually decide. No, Jolt, you go.
You go next. All right,
forget you guys. I'm going. I have three, if I can remember what all three of them are. One is the Ultra 2, and it doesn't actually have to be the Ultra 2. It doesn't have to actually have to shoot Ultra. It could be a half dart blaster. But one of my favorite things that I've ever had is my half dart converted Ultra 2 as a sidearm to any kind of primary, something that is battery powered. Man, you give me an Ultra 2 that has the snap-in lipo like the Strife X does.
That'd be nice.
Even if it's shooting Ultra, real nice. But it could also just be a bigger drum of half darts, which would be amazing. Rear load that thing, popping darts in it off the field. So many game types that would really benefit from. I love doing objective style gameplay where I'm only using my blaster if I have to, and I'm mostly busy with my hands. The Ultra 2 is amazing for that. And it's the only time Nerf has really made something like that.
Oh yeah, for sure. My favorite objective gameplay type blaster to use actually is my rival inline clip Fate. Because I can just stuff darts down it real quick on the field, and I don't have to worry about if I ran out of mags, do I have to start loading mags on the field. Yeah. I can just pick anything off the field. But of course, Hasbro's never made an inline clip blaster, so that's why it wasn't my pick.
Right. Next up, pick any... Actually, no, I'm not going to say pick any. I'm going to say the Centurion. Give us a high power firing. Give us the Centurion, but it shoots like the Tinkershot one. The Ranger.
The Ranger, yeah.
Give us a Centurion that shoots like a Ranger. Put a real power system in it. Give it an actual sealed barrel. Let's go. Let's do it. Whichever mega dart you have to use to make it work, whatever, it's fine. Just give us that. And give us a thing in Nerf Ball where if you get hit with a Mega Dart, it's worth more points. Mega Dart hit, 3 points. Based on the scoring and in the current patent information that we have, it's 1 point for every time you tag somebody. But then if each team gets a Mega Sniper, one Mega Sniper on the team, now you have a new strategic option. That person becomes a bigger target to take out. They also have the potential to rack up your score. If they can get 4 hits, it's worth more than 1 ball score. So I think that that's one of the biggest strengths of this hobby, and I would love to see that reflected in something like Nerf Ball and reflected in the offerings that this pro line has. The other one that I would throw out there that's just kind of a gimme, that would be really, really easy, give me the Raven.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even care. Like, sure, there's
Why'd
more
you have
barrel
to take
drag.
Mine?
Who gives a crap? Ravens are cool.
Why'd
Ravens
you have to sweet. Take mine? I see how it is. I actually had two. I actually had two, though. I was going to say the Raven. The reason why is because some people do like the bullpup aspect of it. And it's personally like a nice feeling blaster. I kind of like it.
It fits me like a glove, man. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Well, and there's strategic like reasons to have a shorter blaster that tucks in tighter to your body
yeah,
if you're
absolutely.
Trying to hide behind cover. It depends on your playstyle.
Yeah, I think a Raven with the pro treatments would be good. A lot of people, I think, would really be on board with it because, again, a lot of people like the bullpup. A lot of people like the form factor. And the other gimme for me, Rapid Strike.
Yeah, I knew that was Obviously, coming. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to have a full auto option.
You would blaster. Have to have.
You have your flagship.
I mean, I prefer that. I mean, this goes back to our discussion about the blaster, right? I would prefer them to make a pro rapid strike so there's a full auto option. And
yes.
it, rather than a select fire blaster, especially for something like Nerf Ball, where it's like, okay, each team, like, you're deciding whether are we going to be running, are we going to have, like, one full auto person who can just kind of, like, run in and, like, cause a ruckus, and that might give you an opportunity to make like a dash for the ball or something.
Yeah, I look at select fire. It is a cool gimmick, but in reality, you are either single shotting or you're burst fire on your own. If like I've have so many blasters that I like to do 2-shot bursts, but I keep it at full auto. And that 2-shot burst is perfect. I don't need the blaster to decide for me or me having to think about switching around. I could just keep it in full auto. And it's just as simple as pulling the trigger once to get a little burst or sometimes even just a single shot or just hold it down to go, you know, dart hose. That's fun. And that's like a really good, especially when I was playing defensively, that works great. You're suppressive. Even just those couple of little shots. And I didn't need select fire to do it. I just look at it as kind of an unnecessary, you know, add-on feature that has all these mechanical complications and all these things. It's a personal preference. Again, you know, these are all nitpicky things. But I think that something like a full auto, because you don't even have to go for like the 13 darts a second like I'm doing. But if you pick somewhere like right around 6 to 8, like that's going to get a lot of people, because there are people who kind of like the higher rate of fire that would probably tune it down and love it. And the people who kind of like lower, who would probably bump up just a little bit and would like it because it would hit similar numbers. The size of the blaster is usually really nice. It's really comfortable. And again, if you kind of bump up the rate of fire just a little bit with some a higher, you know, RPM motor, it'd be your suppressive fire. It'd be great.
I think it would be reasonable even to have like a little dip switch inside the battery compartment with like 2 fire rates on a blaster like that. You know,
that could work. Yeah,
like as a documented feature. But it's just like, you know, you can kind of decide which one you want. All right, Joel, what you got?
Mine is a 3-way tie between 3 different ideas that I think would be amazing. At first, I wanted to say Recon, but that didn't make the cut because basically we already have that. It's called the Nexus Pro.
Pretty true.
And yes, everything I'm about to say here is a Springer. It's my fantasy. Deal with it.
That's fine. Hit us with it.
One of the number one things is obviously since the Recon is out, it's kind of been done. I would like to see an Alpha Trooper. I would like to see the Alpha Trooper done correctly with the internals redesigned to actually work properly. I think that would be an excellent blaster because it has good name recognition, whether it deserves it or not. And it's got a form factor that at least enough people like. I'm not a big fan of the pump grip, but I know some people like it. And I think that if they went back, redesigned everything inside, and made it into a powerhouse, I think a lot of people would love that. My second one would go off of what you were saying, KT, with the Centurion. I would like to see a long shot in 2 years' time, or 3 years' time, to be the long shot XX. I would like to see it specifically, obviously, half dart for the main thing, and I would like to see the long shot front gun make a return, but changed up with a better power system and as a shotgun or something using Mega.
Yeah, I was going to say Mega would be a great option on that one.
For sure.
The long shot is one of my most cherished blasters, not only for like the hobby history behind it, but just because of the way it looks, the way it feels. Get it really powerful with it still having a light prime. Like, it sounds like an excellent option for like a pro level blaster.
You could even have it have something similar to the Pharaoh, where it has a geared prime, because they could change the internals however they want. They don't have to keep it exactly the same.
The most hilarious part about this is I'm seeing this as a potential. If Hasbro did this, now this is going to be a little bit of a out in la la land idea. But say, for example, they did the long shot.
That's what we're here for.
They could like make a competitor to the Dart Zone Mark IV because it has the extended barrel, massive plunder tube for a lighter spring load. Oh, the possibilities there.
I was going to say, what if the long shot front gun had the sealed barrel extension of the Mark IV and the Deuce?
Yeah, and you'd also have the added functionality of an underbarrel.
It actually improves your thing, and you get the underbarrel shot. But at some point, you might have to make a strategic choice where your teammate runs out of ammo or they have a blaster malfunction. You can take that off and toss it to them. And now they at least have like a single shot blaster.
That could function so cool in gameplay and Nerf ball. That would be so cool.
I got you a what if right here. What if the front gun actually had its own mag and was a flywheeler?
I kind of love that and hate that.
Here's my reason why.
I love it. It's almost too much.
My suggestion would have been like more practically.
If you are running in, like, if you are in a oh crap moment, and you just take the front gun off of your long shot, and you have to run and gun, and you have a semi-auto flywheeler,
with a grip.
So basically what we're talking about here is this would be like the flagship big boy dad blaster that's like $200 that they sell for the Nerf ball line type of thing.
But it's so absurd. That's
I think
I
that would
like
be
it.
Cool. I just think the more realistic option, if there is any realism in this fantasy, is we might see them do an air blaster in the bottom.
That's perfect. The mediator barrel, I would bet you a similar mechanism to that with a 3-dart shotgun would fit in a long shot front gun. I would bet you. I've put an AirTech 2000 in one. You can put an AirTech.
Yeah, that's exactly why I said air blaster.
I was going to say, Vile, if what you want is a flywheel long shot front gun, You know where the website is for Y-Core, just like all the rest of us. So
I do, because I'm building it right now.
Okay. But anyway, my third one is, and I don't think this is going to be any surprise to anyone here. Come on, Nerf, give us the pro deploy. It can be done. I've done it. If I can do it, you can do it.
Yes,
that's true. Yes. Jolt, yes. Do it.
Surprisingly enough, the thing I was going to, I don't know why I was half expecting you to say pro Maverick. But yeah, I definitely think the deploy is a way better choice.
Top 10 choice. Yeah, absolutely.
See, the thing was actually I've told this story to Jolt before, but my then sister's boyfriend, now her husband, at the time he used to work at a place that had access to machinery, and I was trying to talk with him because he wanted to make something for me. We were talking through the idea of machining out full metal
internals?
Direct plunger, not reverse plunger. Direct plunger internals for the deploy to make the first two, because this was like, mind you, before, I think, like a couple months before the first one I had seen online was posted on Facebook, at the very least. So we were trying to come up with a way to make the deploy direct plunger and then machine out the internals, and then he was going to make me a set of them. We never got around to it, unfortunately, before his position got moved, but that would have been so cool. And so, like, something like that is kind of just like a... I definitely think seeing a pro deploy would be cool, because I used to really like
the
deploy.
It's got the name recognition, and you could be like, you thought it was bad, now it's good.
We were bad, but now we're good.
I love that. That's the wonderful choices, everybody. Freaking fantastic choices.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But now we must make the choice to end the podcast at almost 2 hours. This is one of our longest episodes.
I haven't even eaten hot glue yet.
Yeah, I think that we expected this to be a long one.
It's kind of funny because at the first we had almost gotten to the halfway point of the episode at around 30 minutes. So I was like, dang, we're doing this in record time. And then
nope. I mean, that's why originally I was going to split the Strife X between the two halves of the show, but I'm glad that we got to just kind of go on it because...
Oh, this was a wonderful discussion.
Great conversation about it. With that, I think we're ready to say... I'm certainly ready to say goodnight. It's 1:30 in the morning here. I guess I'm ready to say goodnight.
Midday for me, night shift gang.
Oh my God, Joel.
And I'm nocturnal.
Anybody got anything special going on to plug before we head out tonight?
I'm probably streaming right now. I'm over at Twitch.
That is so true. Twitch.tv/vile_mods.
Stop by and harass Vile.
Come hang out. And I don't have anything. I just did a remix for Alice Knows Karate, great musician. Did a really cool transformative remix on M8 of that song.
You do spectacular musical work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I guess that's it. That's kind of my new thing. I'm not doing Song a Day anymore. I'm done with that for the year. But
congratulations, it's well
thank
earned.
Thank you. 3 months of it. It felt really good. And next year I'll be doing weekly re-demos of random songs from all the Song a Days I've done over this year in 2019.
Awesome.
So with that, I think we're ready to say goodnight. Good night, y'all. This has been fabulous. And to all the listeners out there, we will talk to you again in 2 weeks. You want to talk to us before then, be sure to join the Discord. That's kind of the best place to hang out with us.
Good night. Sleep tight. Don't let the death darts bite, I guess. I don't know.
Banned from every Nerf Discord.